From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in critically acclaimed Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games.
In this episode, it's a post-mortem of the narrative horror role-playing game An Outcry, with its developer, Quinn Kay. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
Well, I'm Quinn Kay, I make nice games.
You make nice games!
Yay! Not enough people do that.
It's an invitation for people, and not everyone takes us up, so thank you for that.
That is wonderful.
Of course. I've made a lot of nice games, in fact. I've made the nicest damn games. You know,
well, no, hold on now.
Steven, it's not a competition.
Everything for Steven is a competition.
Oh, goodness.
have made a lot of games.
You have made, yeah, for sure.
Like, your itch page is stacked.
I mean, not all of that is games, mind, because I also write poetry anthologies and the like. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a good deal of it is games by this point.
Yeah.
That's super cool. So, I mean, there's An Outcry, and a couple of the things that you've got on some of your various profiles, as you've mentioned, There Swings a Skull, which is the most metal name of a game ever.
Oh man, that name's been like spooking around my head since 2016. Oh. Not like the game idea, just the title of that game has been like with me for a long time. I wrote it into my notes on my phone at one point, and then I was just like, you know what, now's the time to use this.
I really appreciate that as a source of like the seed which a piece grows is just one little thing about it.
Yeah,
like I think a lot of people have this idea of creativity that it must be sort of like crafted whole or that it must come from some process. It's like it can come from anywhere and it can just be this little thing that sticks in your head a long time. So I like hearing stories about that.
It's also so vivid. It's a vivid phrase that definitely stays with you. It makes sense. You also do pixel art, you do music work, you do a whole bunch of stuff, not just nice games.
It feels kind of surreal sometimes to hear that, because while you're doing it, you don't really register it as all that big of a deal, especially if, you know, maybe you're not exactly getting, quote unquote, the recognition that you feel that sort of jack of all tradeness would usually warrant. I mean, I do get recognition, obviously. I've been nominated for an award now, which is, again, buck wild. It's just at the same time I'm still looking for work in the industry and not really finding it, but that's fine.
Yeah It's a tough industry.
Oh yeah, especially recently.
Yeah
That it is.
Oof.
So we are here to talk about a specific game, right? We're here to talk about An Outcry. So I wanted to know how you came up with this idea.
An Outcry came to me one night when I locked myself out of my apartment in Vienna. Back then, I was living in a flat share with two other fine folks who I'm still, at least one of them I'm still tied with. It was around that time that sort of a lot of things in this world started going very wrong. It was specifically, I believe, I'm not sure if it was the exact evening, but it was definitely around the time that Donald Trump was elected in the United States. And that is that was an event that we definitely even felt even in Austria. I don't know, people just started feeling emboldened for their hateful bullshit. And you know, it was as a result, you know, that sort of stuff going on with me as a non-binary person back then, you know, identifying differently, but still, you know, knowing that this was something that affected a lot of people I loved and myself. I, you know, it was just kind of like, man, now I'm also locked out.
On top of all
so,
that.
Thankfully, I did have a pack of cigarettes. Back then, I was a smoker. I've since quit.
Oh, nice.
And I just went outside into the courtyard of that building, and I saw it on this like enormous pile of bricks whose presence until that moment I had not questioned. And I saw like a bird on it sort of watching me. And I'm not even, but from today's standpoint, I'm not even really sure anymore if there was actually a bird or if I just imagined it. It might be that sort of different things I'd seen on that pile of bricks in my time sort of merged together in that moment. But yeah, that was sort of the first impulse on an outcry. It was around that time that I was working in Twine 1.4. I believe it was also around the time that 1.4 was updated to 2.0.
Okay.
Which for a lot of people was actually the falling off point from that engine. Because they very majorly restructured and changed the syntax of the code to be a lot less accessible. And just generally like mess it all up because like, you know, you were used to a certain way of doing the code in Twine. And then all of a sudden, you just had no more idea how you were supposed to be making things with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been messing around with Twine. There was I also had this sort of collection of short stories called the Something Stories. Something Stories were sort of my first foray into exploring my non-binary-ness before I was even really understood that I was non-binary. In that it was about a main character who was neither male nor female, but was always referred to as its pronouns. And that main character sort of took on a very ubiquitous role, a role of basically different role in society, but always sort of a similar flavor of it. I had that concept. And for that concept, I had also made a Twine adventure, which is now on my itch again. It's called Ah. So with those tools, I started my first attempt at an outcry. It was called an outcry already by that point. If I had like changed the name at any point, it would have probably been a good idea, but I'll get to that later. It was called an outcry already by that point. Unfortunately, that first Twine sketch was lost. I don't know.
Okay.
Whatever the case, though, you know, it had a lot of the sort of elements of that, of what the game still has now, which is, you know, the walking outside, smoking, and then suddenly this horrible noise washes over everything. And this decision of, you know, follow and ignore was already in place then, too. So, yeah, that was the inkling of the idea.
So the most recent version is not made in Twine, then? If I'm understanding correctly. Okay.
No.
What engine is it in?
The most recent version of the game is in RPG Maker 2003. It actually has a visual component, a traversal component, and even RPG battles. Hence, you know, it's a narrative RPG.
I have heard, I have not really messed with the RPG Maker myself much, but I have heard that RPG Maker is frustrating to work with, if it's the nicest way to put it.
RPG Maker 2003 for sure is frustrating in certain ways, but also this is something that I talked about at one point in the past when I chatted about my experience making an outcry on my Patreon. I personally find the use of restriction in the making of my art extremely liberating.
Yeah.
It's very useful to sort of stick down the boundaries of what you are trying to make. It makes sure that it keeps you know, scope creep in check.
Yeah.
Because certain things are just simply not going to be possible.
Right. Yeah.
But then it also entices you to push against those boundaries.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what can I do with this? What can I do that's going to really just dazzle people? Where people will look at it and be like, I didn't know RPG Maker could do that. And I'm happy to say that there are a few things I have managed to do in an outcry that people have had people reacting that way.
That's so cool.
So, yeah.
I totally understand that, like, that the restrictive but liberating nature of working in a small box. Cause like, I think when I feel like I have more experience now. But like when I first started making games, I would just be, you know, I would just work within my limits, but like try to do things out of the box within my limits, which is a weird way of saying that. But like, I basically would like take what I know and then like twist it so that I could do things that would probably be easier if I just knew the better way of doing it.
And that's exactly what I did. Yeah, that is exactly what I did, for one. Because, you know, and Outcry was my first really major game with a visual component.
Yeah,
my
yeah,
first,
okay.
Like, actually, like, you know, that Twine adventure that is that I've now uploaded to my itch does not have a visual component. It has an audio component, but not a visual one.
Sure.
As for an Outcry and RPG Maker 2003, it's also kind of just like, man, what can I get away with? What will this engine let me do?
Yeah.
Because in RPG Maker 2003's case, it's also a thing of a problem of the engine just genuinely having very horrible performance. It's very easy to make RPG Maker 2003 sweat buckets if you're not careful with how much code you put in it at the same time. It's very funny.
Well, knowing those limits and running up against them, I think people get really surprised that like genius work comes from inexperienced people or people who don't have a lot of access to tools. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because that ability to be an artist under constraint is not something that is out of reach of anybody. It's like whatever your constraints are, you can still excel. And I think a great example of that is like the Beatles famously stopped touring and started being a studio only band at a time when all that was available was 4-track recorders. Mm. And would they have been such an innovative studio band if they had 32-track recording in 1965 or whatever? I mean, it's an interesting counterfactual, but like a lot of those things, it doesn't always rely on experience or access. Sometimes it's choice too.
Yeah.
I think when you get more experienced, like sometimes you have to find your way back to putting a lid on it so you are not just floundering around with a million possibilities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's whatever stage you are in your career, experience, or resources, it's very applicable to like, when it's just blue sky, do whatever you want, it's very hard to find a grasp on something. And even to take this next step, like not just the first step, but the next and the next and the next.
Funny you should mention the Beatles and like the 1960s, because like in the 1960s, a big literary movement started in France called the Oulipo. Which is the Au Roi de la Littérature Potentielle, Workshop for Potential Literature. And that was like a collection of writers who all basically wrote under these extreme and very convoluted restrictions. And that was one of the major inspirations also on the way that I made an Outcry, and Outcry's text, and also, you know, the engine that I ended up using and the way that I sort of expressed myself in that engine.
Yeah.
Because very specifically, there is a book by Georges Perec, one of the writers of that Oulipo, called A Man Asleep, that it was a huge inspiration on an Outcry as well.
Did that direct your decision to go with not just RPG Maker, but RPG Maker 2003 specifically? Was that an artificial constraint?
To be honest, the engine choice was mostly because I had already worked in that engine with Off, and also because it was what I had on hand, and because I felt like it was the first possible step for me to sort of overcome a genuinely decade-spanning fear of coding.
I feel that. I feel that.
Yeah.
You code for a living, Steven.
I know.
So circumstantial to begin with, but then you embrace it.
Yes, then I embraced it. And, you know, I remembered all of those things I had read and all the things I had read by people of the Oulipo and such. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had already taken some lessons from the Oulipo for that sort of something story thing that I had made beforehand. So it kind of just, I mashed it all together and this is what came out.
That reminds me, there's a similar film movement, Danish film called Dogma 95, which is very similar. Lars von Trier made a couple of films from it. He's probably the most famous filmmaker who made films in that style, but very similar, just like this, you know, only diegetic music, like really a lot of constraints just to like force your creativity to flourish. We'll put that in the show notes, but I'm sure there are plenty of other examples of people who like, you know, because what those arbitrary rules are is up to you, but you can always ascribe to a philosophy. It doesn't restrict you. It frees you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so big thoughts done. Let's get to the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. No, we'll save room for big thoughts.
We can come back to big thoughts.
But yeah. Talk about the production.
Oh, it was kind of a snowball effect type deal. At the very start, it was only myself. Mm-hmm. I made all of the graphics. I wrote all of the dialogue. The thing is, an Outcry, there were many attempts at making an Outcry. First one, of course, was that Twine game that is now lost.
Yeah.
And the other one was a point-and-click adventure prototype that I had done with together with my friend Kyra. That one just kind of crashed and burned very badly, partially due to inexperience on both Kyra on my part. I think both of us were kind of responsible for that. But in the process, I had commissioned some music from some folks, specifically Jack King Spooner and Christoph Frey, someone at the game dev also from my country. At the very start in mid 2020, you know, pandemic has been raging on for like 3 months. And it was like, well, I'm not gonna get a job right now, so I guess I might as well just try this thing. And you know, I sat down, I made graphics, I made the sort of interior space of this place. In one of the postmortems that I posted, there's also just sort of this first simple sketch of the game world of an Outcry. Because mm-hmm. from the very start, I wanted the world of that game to be extremely small. Mm. Like, basically, like if this were a stage production, it could all happen in the same space, and there would have to be no changes.
Okay,
I love. Or that. Maybe one change, and not no more.
Yeah. Talk about constraints.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. It's extremely small. I did both as a cost saving measure, but also because I knew this was my very first game and I wanted to actually finish it.
So smart.
Yeah, it's an insight so few have from Joe. That's genius.
Yeah,
I have not done that.
Oh. Alas. So, you know, I had some music and such, so I was able to like really put together something that kind of felt right and such. And, you know, I showed it off to like some folks. I had some dialogue that I'd pre-written for a while. I believe the first character in the game whose dialogue I've really written was Schmidt. It was like one of the big assholes in that story. I just was able to show that off to someone, to specifically my boyfriend, Kithead. And Kithead just, you know, suggested that he get on board the project and just make the full screen artwork. And the game, and you know, it snowballed from there. I talked about about the game. I showed it off in some spaces. First, I just showed it off in like a trans game dev server, and I immediately found like two musicians who were interested in making things for it. One of whom is now one of my closest game dev friends, Leaflet. Like Leaflet and I have been through thick and thin. We've like worked on how many games together now? Yeah, three games.
Oh wow!
We are working on more. So yeah, I guess there's something about like my stories and their music that's really just works together. Whatever the case, you know, Leaflet came on board and made a really nice, very chill and mysterious track for the interior of the apartment building and such. And from there, you like it snowballed, because like here's another thing. There is a character in an Outcry who is a Turkish woman, a Turkish immigrant. Who is employed as the apartment building's janitor. A relatively common sort of narrative in Austria, unfortunately, because oftentimes, you know, immigrants are here as elsewhere, you know, exploited for their labor pretty badly. Whatever the case, you know, as a result of that, because I am not Turkish, I wanted to make sure that I had a sensitivity reader, somebody who could like look over the dialogue and be like, as well as the designs around this person, this character, and tell me like, okay, this is fine, you need to work on this, or whatever. So, you know, we put a call out for that, and we found one Kaya, who is a really cool, low-poly developer, who made a small sort of car simulation type game called Rust Bucket Revenge. It's very pulpy. It's not like, you know, a very heady horror game or whatever. But, you know, it was part of that Haunted PS1 movement. And Kaya told me, like, very suddenly, like, hey, do you want to, like, be invited to Haunted PS1? We're currently, like, close invite, but you're making a cool horror type game. I think people would like it there. It's low res and stuff. And, you know, from there, it kept snowballing because, you know, more people got interested in it. And eventually, like, the Haunted PS1 demo disc of 2021 had an open call for submissions. And it was just like, what the hell? We're gonna scrape together a demo as best as we can. Oh no, we could only really get one of the two routes in there. Screw it. I'm just gonna submit it. And then suddenly, like, we are pleased to say that you've been accepted into the disc. I'm like, what?
Oh.
Excuse me.
That is, like, I love the trajectory of how this game worked, because you're just working on it on your own, but then you put yourself out there and you showed the game off to folks and they were excited about it and they wanted to jump on, and then it just kept, as you said, it just kept snowballing. And I just love that story, because I feel like the opposite has happened a lot of the time, where, like, people have a really cool idea and they'll show it off and other people won't want to jump on. And so, like, they're kind of against the world, and eventually it comes out there, but, like, maybe the game could have been stronger if they had that initial support.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, also, there's when you start, you make a couple projects, maybe you start making just the tiniest bit of money. Mm. You thought, maybe I'm going to do this as professionally.
Yeah.
One of the things that starts closing off to you is that sort of that natural, organic, artistic movement.
Right. Yeah.
That is really, I mean, it's the thing that, like, people working in AAA, like, should really be very jealous of, is the ability to, like, ideas first, get people excited and get people's, you know, motivation and consideration. I mean, as an games being an art and business is so complicated and annoying.
Yes.
and you're going to have to deal with both sides of it, right? Mm-hmm. There's no game from, like, Madden 22 or whatever to, like, this, you know, the smallest personal thing on itch is devoid of the other half of that equation. There's always a little bit, you know, and the math is different for every game. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that you have, and Quinn, you can talk about this, like, how you dealt with dealing with these two halves, if at all, is just how, as you bring on collaborators, like, how much of that is really just about, like, this is an opportunity to express and contribute versus this is an opportunity to work on something.
Hmm. The business side of things, and it was definitely, you know, it was a very, very, and I'll be very frank with you all. And Outcry's development was a very, very, very hard time for me. I made a lot of very hard sacrifices, material sacrifices specifically, making that game, because oftentimes, you know, the expenses of paying people duly and correctly and, you know, fairly for the work that they were putting into this game, the small 2000 RPG Maker 2003 type game that other people would have probably, like, all made all the assets for themselves, or, like, with, like, maybe some friends for free, and then, like, put out for free. Like, that this small game ate a lot of my resources, and I had to sell off some very near and dear to me possessions in the process of making it as a result of that. But, and this is something that I say with some amount of pride, sort of to talk about the business side of things, I have not alienated or offended or otherwise mistreated any of the people I've worked with on that game, apparently. This is the kind of thing that you don't really realize until it's all said and done, until the dust is settled.
Yeah.
But no, there's not, to my understanding, no one's really been like scorned by the way that I've treated them in the production process, either from, like, the perspective of recompense or otherwise.
Yeah.
And I think that that was worth a lot. It was a very, you know, destructive process insofar as I lost a lot of my belongings, a lot of things very, very dear to me. Among them, funnily enough, my Twin Peaks box sets.
Wow.
Yeah. Twin Peaks is something so incredibly important to me, and the fact that I now no longer have the means to really watch it anymore is kind of sad.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that an outcry took from me. But, you know, I have a cool game out now. Yeah.
Well, listeners should, you know, visit your Patreon, toss a couple
yes.
bucks.
Yeah.
Hey, no.
Get
hey.
Twin Peaks back in their life. That's important.
No.
I don't mind putting that call out.
Twin Peaks is great.
Yep.
You deserve Twin Peaks. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
I had like season 1 and 2 in that like cool blue box set with uh-huh. the little secret compartment where like the Fire Walk With Me piece of paper was in.
Oh wow.
At that one. And also the, you know, season 3 that had very, you know, that I had only accrued rather recently then. But yeah, both of those I had to sell.
Oh man.
Whatever the case, you know, I am very, very happy all the same with the way that an outcry panned out. Like I said, you know, I haven't really offended anyone, to my understanding, at least so far. Just hoping. In the process of making it, either by underpaying them or otherwise. And I've basically made the game I wanted to make.
That's great.
The way I wanted to make it.
That's a success story, like, all around.
Yeah. And that's a lesson, I think, to other developers who are like, I don't have any money. I don't have any resources. Like, I'm not a business. I'll just, like, make some things with my friends or whatever. And, like, you had the foresight to make sure that you treated people with respect to their time and efforts artistically, but also literally materially in this world. And you made those sacrifices because it was your vision and your game. And I think that is it. You are right to be proud of that, because it is a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are like, you know, they're willing to bend on that a lot of times. And it's very tempting and very easy to not live up to that standard.
The thing is, an outcry is at its very core, like a humanist game. Mm-hmm. It's a humanist story. It's a story that is there to spread in some form or another compassion. I also made sure to, you know, keep that in mind in the production process, both for other people who might be affected by this subject matter and myself, because there were absolutely moments where an outcast development was grueling, as most games development, all games development actually is at one point or another. But in this case, it was just, you know, exacerbated by the thematic through lines of this game, the presence of this grave distress in that story, as well as, you know, the political darkness that it showcases.
I think that it's good that, like, the development process fed into the ideas of the game. I think that's really cool, and it's something that you can kind of feel that in a lot of AAA games, where, like, they'll talk about, like, something that a lot of indie games try to do, but that, you know, they don't necessarily have the budget or the resources to pull it off. Where a AAA game does, and they have the resources, but due to the way that the development worked, they didn't have everything together, or their goals, some of the financial goals, I suppose, run counter to the ideas that they actually have, and so you can kind of feel it in the development in while playing a game.
Yeah. Wanting to say a thing
is
not the same as being in a position to say it.
Right.
Right. And so resources aren't the only thing that can get you what you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, helps. But
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But process is important.
Yeah. Process is
and
important.
And that can be independent or tied to everything else. But making sure that, you're right. I think AAA is the thing that, I mean, it's sort of a cliche of like how like generic and samey it can be, but a big part of that is because of the process,
right?
And because it has to be there are things that are filed away, which sometimes makes people's jobs easier, but then can be difficult. And so finding that balance and getting some clawing some of that back without taking advantage of people or exploiting them creatively or financially. Now I'm just rambling about it, this friggin' puzzle that all games are, right?
Ain't that the truth?
I think it's there's, you know, I think more we want to talk about in terms of like developing an Outcry and questions for you about, I have questions about the art and birds, but but before we move on from this topic, I want to say that that was, I don't know, like what you just said about making sure that that was prioritized for you in the game that you made and the, you know, keeping in mind that your self-care, but also the care of all the other humans on your team. I think that was something I really needed to hear right now. Cause it's like the last few months have been really very like workaholic months for me and just busted my ass on stuff that, you know, I'm not sure it's ever going to really make, I don't know if it's ever going to touch anyone's soul. And just like, yeah, so I needed to hear that today. So thanks for talking through that. Cause I think it's pretty inspirational.
Granted, I have to say it's probably gets a lot harder the more people you have to coordinate.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, an Outcry's team was sizable, but there were certain people who were just contractors and like deaf to make one asset and then just sort of stand by and just do their own thing also for something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, I will admit it's easy to talk a big game when you are doing it easy mode.
No, that is
when you're in a triple A studio and you're a producer in that triple A studio, you can't possibly have a good relationship with like the 120 people that you're trying to coordinate. It's not possible.
Right.
It's not humanly possible.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, you know, as a result, I do have to just to note that I'm not tooting my own horn here. I've had it on easy mode. And
right.
And, you know.
Well, you know, praise be to the producers, the sort of unsung managers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's, you know, when it's your project and it's a smaller team, you can take that on yourself. Yeah. It's not that it's easy.
Right.
I think, you know, you're sort of, you know, you're sort of dismissing the challenge you had as a producer of the game as well.
Right.
And you shouldn't diminish the achievement, but you are right. When it gets bigger, suddenly that has to be somebody's job. And I think, sort of sometimes the middle management that's what it's for. You know, it's kind of hard to, it sucks to admit it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes.
Yes, it does.
But, but you know, there needs to be eyes on that and process and, you know, structures and institutional, you know, workflows and all that stuff.
Right,
that is boring and goes on spreadsheets.
Because otherwise, it'll be worse.
Yeah.
So I think that's yeah.
Here we go for the blur. Take one. Action.
nicegames.club/discord.
Cut. Let's do take two.
All right, fine.
What's there? Is this better, Mark?
What? No, I'm
not any better.
I'm giving up on this bit.
Okay.
Okay. There's cool stuff happening on Discord. Like, it's been taken over the last like week and a half by Daily Glom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which people love.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think we don't maybe need a Discord anymore. We can just have a Daily Glom channel, and that could be enough for our listeners. They have not complained about the ubiquity of Glom on there, but we're going to, I think, maybe separate that out because it's done so well into its own little channel coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about the show, if you want to talk about your experience playing any of the games that we talk about in our postmortem episodes, if you want to suggest topics for new episodes, if you want to insert third suggestion here, it's just a place to talk with other listeners of the show, and it's been really valuable for the people who are there. Make new game dev friends, which is something we talk about in this episode, and just, you know, tell us how great our show is. Maybe I don't know. You can skip that part.
Well, I'd like to hear that. Is this the time now? Can I say nicegames.club/discord?
Yes.
Okay. nicegames.club/discord.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So can we pivot to playtesting?
Okay.
Yeah. Steven, would you like to pivot to playtesting?
Yes.
Always, right?
Always.
Right. So it's a highly emotional game, like you've talked about. It's also highly narrative. I'm really curious about how you approached playtesting and what that was like.
That's the big black mark on my soul.
Steven, cover your ears.
Yeah, well, not. Well, that's putting it too harshly. But what I mean is, like, an Outcry was definitely not sufficiently playtested.
Oh,
there were some bugs out in for the first like 2-3 weeks that a game should not have shipped with. Not severe stuff like crashes, but soft locks that were at crucial points.
Yeah.
And an Outcry was not sufficiently playtested. It was playtested.
Mm-hmm.
The people that playtested it had volunteered for that. And in certain, some of them, like my friend Luke, also known as Subwones, shout outs, Subwones specifically wanted to play it because he had played it on the Haunted PS1 demo disc, the demo, and really found the thematics interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that especially cool because the way that he perceived the thematics of the game was exactly what I was going for.
Ooh.
And so, the finished game was just more of that and all pointing in that direction.
Yeah.
So I was very excited, to give it to him, and he was very excited to receive it.
Oh, cool.
And it very deeply affected him.
Mm.
It was so incredibly affirming to know that this story that I'd written had landed and how it had bullseyed into somebody.
Wow, yeah.
And, that in the playtesting process, Luke did find a bunch of bugs that he fixed.
Thank you, Luke.
But in the playtesting process, it really steeled my resolve.
Yeah.
And the team's resolve, because, I shared these notes with the team and they were just like, hell yeah. So, yeah, it's the playtesting process, while too sparse for any project to really any professional project that costs money, in my opinion, was definitely a very important thing. And some bad bugs were found and squashed in time. And I did like for an entire year post release, I actually continuously updated the game, not with very much new content, but definitely with a lot of bug fixes for severe things. So I've been supporting the game basically since the start, and up until March of this year, I haven't done anything since then.
Yeah, I appreciate both that you got when you showed it to someone, you got feedback that was affirming in that you're going in the right direction. I've heard a lot of developers locally in particular, like come to a playtest event and be like, oh, I already know what the issues of the game are. But I know what I'm going for, and I don't really need to get it playtested, which, you know, I'm vehemently against.
Right. Sometimes you just want to show it off.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not a bad instinct necessarily. Yeah. But it's playtesting is a way to find out what's not working, but it's also, it is important to see when it is working.
Exactly.
Yeah. That is just as important. Yes. And like you said, it wasn't sufficiently playtested, but that doesn't mean that the playtesting you did wasn't really valuable. Right. And I think you recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, some of it is just like knowing it works.
A major factor in why I would say that the playtesting of an Outcry was problematic was that it wasn't playtested very much during development.
Okay.
This means the final result was playtested.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of kind of bad design errors that as a result are still in the finished game.
Right. Because toward the end, you can do more QA and less design tweaks. Yeah. Okay. It's important that you recognize that, like, once it was too late to make those changes, you at least recognized it was too late to make those changes.
Hmm. Yeah.
But that's healthy too.
Yeah. A major example for that is actually the game saving function, the game save function.
Mm.
If you've played an Outcry, you will know that in an Outcry, you save the game by smoking a cigarette. This can be done almost anywhere. The game doesn't tell you where it can't be done, but if you try it in a place where it can't be done, it'll tell you, hey, this is not the right moment.
No smoking here.
This doesn't exactly work.
Oh no.
There's a bunch of reasons for that. First of all, you know, it's kind of uncertain where the player can smoke.
Right.
It does get more obvious near the end because, like, there's a point in both routes where the game tells you you can now smoke indoors. And that is kept fairly consistent.
Mm.
However, what I didn't consider is a major part of gamer psychology, which dictates the safeguarding of a finite resource till the bitter end.
Oh, yeah.
And cigarettes are a finite resource.
Ah.
And when you have the ability to smoke them anywhere, you're not going to think about it.
Right. Oh.
If you remember, if I could, like, sort of compare it after the fact, if I had, like, realized this during development, I would have absolutely done something like this. If I can make compare this to, for example, Resident Evil. Mm. In Resident Evil, you have a ink ribbon and you have the thing you use the ink ribbon in.
Yeah.
So you can only use the finite resource at a very specific point. And through the player knowing that point, they're like, aha, here I can use my ink ribbon. And because there's one of these here, that means I should probably save right now.
Yeah.
It is able to tell the player, save now, without having to tell the player that with text.
Right.
Whereas in an Outcry, I had to remind the player to save, which is not particularly elegant. It worked, but it wasn't elegant.
Yeah,
right.
And making that resource finite, right, creates that problem of suddenly it's precious, but then giving them an opportunity to or informing them this is where you use it, even if, say, the it was finite but you had plenty, making the choice to use it when encouraged to gives the player some feeling of control.
Even
if it's just a trick, right? Or if it is really finite, then it makes that choice important.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you recognize that, because thematically how you had it does make a ton of sense. And I could totally see how you could have missed that through development. Because as you were describing, I'm like, that's super clever.
Yeah.
And then you describe the problem. It's like, oh, I guess that's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
it's definitely the kind of thing where you're like, while you're doing it, you're just like, why does no one else ever done this before? And then you're just like, ah, that's why.
Well, there's the joy in learning eventually, right?
Yep, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Alan, you had wanted to talk about birds.
Yeah.
Quintessence.
So
excited to talk about it. I love it.
My segue into this is the art is fantastic and spooky and fantastic. And I don't think I've ever been creeped out by a still shot of a bird like I have been with the art from An Outcry before. So, but I come from a very bird positive family. So my background with birds is entirely positive. There's no creepy birds. I'm curious if the root, you know, like if the birds as kind of antagonist in the game really goes back to that moment that you described, like as like the root and the inspiration of this game where this bird was watching you and then wasn't there. Or if there's something else behind that.
Does a bird owe you money?
Yeah.
It goes back to an old Franz Kafka story.
Okay.
It's the beginning of an old manuscript. That's right. An old manuscript wherein he describes the speech of some characters in the story as like jackdaws. Sort of a screeching of jackdaws. And, you know, from there, I sort of looked at jackdaws and saw that they had these extremely striking white eyes, like, or blue eyes, even, if I recall correctly. So they sort of sting out. And this reminded me of something very Austrocentric, very Austrian. And so, you know, I saw that parallel. And for the longest time, you know, the birds in that game were jackdaws because of this. At least I believe that was sort of the process. It might be that something else also drove that, but I couldn't really be sure anymore. But for a number of reasons, I ended up sort of tossing that out, partially because of the background of that specific Franz Kafka story that under a new eye, I realized was kind of racist.
That happens with a lot of stories.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Always look twice when you pull something from that era.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead, I had read about the shrike, the loggerhead shrike,
yes.
A songbird that is at the same time a carnivorous executor, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Steven, you know, because we watched that series of Star Trek where they describe what a shrike is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, this very small, unassuming, but brutal bird that just spikes up its prey on thorns. I decided that something like that, like a symbol like that, like a beautiful thing, a unassuming thing, a cute thing, even small, you know, if you grab a shrike, it's like that.
Yeah.
Like just being the worst person, you know, and a murderous asshole was very correct.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never think of birds the same way.
A lifetime of pro bird sentiment.
Yeah. Wiped out by one video game.
If you've played the Ignore Route, you might actually know that the birds are not birds. Something else. The birdness is not birds.
So maybe you're in the clear.
Maybe.
We can't continue without spoiling it.
Right. I'm actually curious if a lot of that stuff went into the promotion of the game. Because, you know, this got nominated for an award, so people heard about it. I'm curious the process and how you promoted An Outcry.
Yeah, not just promotion, but just like how you describe it on the itch page.
Yes.
Presentation.
Yeah.
More broadly.
Yes, yes, thank you.
I'll be real with you. Like the not very much promotion or marketing went into An Outcry at all. Aside from the demo disc for which a lot of people sort of caught wind of it. And it was, you know, it wasn't maybe a standout on the disc or anything, but it was definitely different from everything else on the disc. People had very strong reactions to An Outcry.
Okay.
Either like just abhorring it completely and even questioning its state as a game, you know, about that, of course.
Yeah.
or even its stature, the validity of it being on the demo disc. Like that was something that people questioned. But you know, that in turn makes people remember it.
Yeah.
And when they catch wind through like social media, that, hey, this thing's out now. It's done. Like, you know, a game on the demo disc coming to fruition is a major thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not easy to finish a video game, and a lot right. of the demos on these demo discs either fall prey to circumstance or just fizzle out for unrelated reasons. Maybe like a different idea came along that was more seductive to that specific developer mm-hmm. or other such stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when people heard that an Outcry was done, they knew what that game is. Hmm. Even if they weren't interested in it, they knew yeah. what that game was yeah. if they had played the demo disc. And then another big thing was that I asked Amos Sori, who is one of the major a major figure in the Haunted PS1 community, to make the release trailer for the game.
Cool.
And I think that thing turned a lot of heads.
Yeah.
Okay.
That trailer is relentlessly effective. it's very simple means it sells what the game is about and how the game will make you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was definitely counted for a lot
yeah.
in the process. Another thing I just did is, like, you know, I was fairly active on the game's now defunct Twitter.
Yeah.
In the days leading up to the release of the game, I actually did a very fun little marketing spiel, I guess. Spiel in the German sense of the word, a game, so mm-hmm. to say. Wherein I posted something, like two things every single day. One of them being sort of an unrelated thing, like my musician sort of recommending music, a little short story that I've written from the perspective of one of the characters in the game,
mm-hmm.
that sort of deal. But then also, this is kind of a spoiler for an Outcry. In the later part of the follow route, there is a point where the narrator gets subdued oh. and is replaced by a bird.
Oh.
So, you know, and I decided to put that, because people wouldn't know that it also happens in the game.
Yeah.
I decided to basically make the person that was running the Twitter be also replaced by a bird.
Oh, nice.
And have that bird sort of do a countdown.
Yeah.
Down to the day until an Outcry is out. So it sort of stayed, at least for the like first, for the 3 weeks leading up to release, it stayed in people's minds.
Yeah. That's clever.
What's particularly clever about that is that it works on its own as a piece of like promotion for the game.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also, and it's sort of a stealth spoiler, right? It doesn't really spoil anything, but then when you encounter it, you can, if you experience that, you can call back to it. And then it lodges yourself in your brain a little bit more, which is then feeds into what the best way for indie games to promote themselves, word of mouth.
Yeah.
Right? And so having all these things tie together is a way to maximize your effort, because you only have so much time to do social media, to prepare key art, to get a trailer or commission one.
Right.
Like, you have such limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
You have to spend them as with the maximum effort you possibly can. And that is a great example of how you can do that. It's not one that other games could easily replicate, but they could find something like that to get there. And, you know, you're never going to be able to measure the success of that.
Also true.
That's genius.
A large part of me always wants to protest.
Well, as any artist should, right? No. No, yeah. That's the right instinct, for sure. But let us compliment you.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm still wilding over the fact that there's demo discs in 2021, 2023, and games are getting like good promotion of it. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, the Haunted PS1 demo discs are a fantastic project.
Okay.
It's starting to somewhat fizzle out a little bit with because, you know, the low poly aesthetic and all of that is somewhat starting to recede a little bit.
Oh, sure.
But it is, you know, that community was just like lightning in a freaking bottle.
Yeah.
Like, so many, like, of the, some of the most hardworking developers currently, like, active in micro indie circles
mm-hmm.
just came together and created this sudden, like, sort of, stage for people to like show off their cool stuff on.
Yeah.
And somehow a lot of people started paying attention to that. Like that stage had a lot of eyes on it for a long time, for like at least 3 years, which, you know, in these times is a decently long amount. And yeah, I've made what I hope are friendships for life there. And it's a great place, Honda PS1.
You know, that's a model that is replicated in other communities, genres and stuff, like Wholesome Games.
Right.
The specific Wholesome Games, like you've heard the Wholesome Direct. They started out as a Discord for developers to sort of like cross-promote each other's work, be force multipliers. And if you can be part of that, like that is so valuable. I will say, like, personally, that's something I've never felt like the work that I have done at like my own, the games that are closest to my heart.
Sure.
I cannot imagine a community would fit into unless I built it, and I don't got time for that.
Yeah.
And so I really, so if you are someone who is able to make something that's unique, but you can find a community of people, of like-minded folks, not just all making the same thing or anything like that, that's not what it is, but if you can find a community that can, you can get some advantage and build those, develop those game dev friends. I mean, that's probably more valuable than the promotion, cross promotion you get. Leap on that opportunity if you can.
Yeah.
I think that's the lesson here, but also just good advice. And we've seen it all over the place. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Incidentally, I found the document in which I wrote down some of these like sort of promotional tweets that are now gone for that thing. Something that, you know, also people that haven't played in Outcry will not know. The antagonist in that game specifically speaks in rhyme in a very sort of theatrical voice, or the antagonists rather. They all have the same type of voice, and as a result, I have trouble like getting rid of a lot of their lines. Unfortunately, I can't leave them behind fully. So, word of advice to any writers here working in games or otherwise. Don't make your antagonist rhyme. You won't be rid of them. But yeah, find that with strength, burdens embraced, turned the new speaker and turned the new face. 10. Terror of terror, grace of grace, fall on our feet, your cut is the chase. 9. It's always, you know, this very short sort of four-line poem that is just spoken, and then like, you know, the how many days until release.
That's great too. I love that on Twitter in general, just like the little short stories that fit in the it uses the format very well, and I think that's that the way that you're doing it here too is great for the
well, that's the key to any kind of promotion, is to like know the format, right? And that's why community managers and social media managers are like, that's why that's a real profession,
because
it takes a lot of work.
It does.
And if you can do it yourself, like, I mean, extra kudos to be able to manage that, because it's a real skill and it's hard.
Yeah. So looking back on the whole project, what did you learn from building it that you didn't know about before?
Pick one thing.
Pick one thing. Yeah, there's a lot of things.
Or pick 12 things. I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, I'm sure there were tons of things that you learned on the project that you didn't know before. But yeah, I'm wondering if you could distill that like down to a couple. What would you carry forward to the next project?
Yeah.
There are things I did very right in the process of making an Outcry. And I aim to carry that with me forward. Make sure that my productions don't grow in size to the point that I'm not able to perform this kind of labor, the production labor necessary for like a good work environment and such. But a definite problem that I learned in the process of making an Outcry, I learned that game development's really expensive. It's extremely expensive. Listener at home, if you don't make games yourself and you're just like, oh yeah, I'm sure like games must be expensive, like, you know, you think of a figure, add a zero onto that figure. It really is a lot.
Well, if you can find a way to avoid that cost, know that you will pay it elsewhere.
Yes. Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's not just about money, right? If you can find a way to not pay a contributor by giving them credit or something, or sweet talking them, you know, then you will still pay for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, and that's just
amazing. And you will honestly, you'll pay with like a part of your soul for that kind of thing in a way.
Well, also, if you want to, you know, it's like, oh, I can't afford to pay someone to do this. I will do it. You will pay not just in time, but in stress and in scope creep and all that too. Yeah. So it's not just the corrupting trade-offs you make. It's the practical ones, the ones that seem smart. Are also, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it depends on the resources you have. If you have a lot of time, that's your currency, right?
Yeah.
My friend Will, who for a while mentored me in Game Maker Code and who is who worked on Freedom Planet 2 recently, recently, like a couple days ago, actually, really just summed it all up in a single sentence. Quote, games are really cool, but they require you to be at least decent at so many disparate things, and for every thing you're not good at, it becomes incredibly expensive.
Even to get to that point where you are good at those things, that is expensive in and of itself.
Time is a cost.
Time is a cost. You pay for that in life expectancy, which, you know, we shouldn't say it, but it's true.
So Quinn, where can listeners find you in the future if they wanted to get in contact or just see all the new work that you're working on?
Well, for one, you know, there's my itch.io, quinnk.itch.io. I plan to also use that more frequently as a blogging platform for sort of game progress. Mm-hmm. Additionally, of course, there's the much more accessible Tumblr blog, quinnkdev.tumblr.com. You can find me on Tumblr. And otherwise, you know, if you want to toss a coin my way, I guess there is patreon.com/quinnk.
Yeah.
It would be very appreciated.
Well, you mentioned to us earlier before we started recording, you have other some more postmortem thoughts on your Patreon for free.
Yeah, yeah. That's generally speaking my ethos with Patreon. Like, it's a very temporary exclusivity of like just 1 week, and then like it's publicly available.
Cool.
Especially because I wanted the process of making this game to be somewhat you know, openly available for people to see.
Great. Cool. Well, thank you so much.
No. Thank you all as well for having me, and you know, for letting me ramble for as long as I have. There was a lot to say, and you know, I'm the type of person that maybe doesn't get to speak as often as I would like to, I suppose, at least from the perspective of like actually talking about my work. So I really appreciated that you all gave me a platform for that.
It's been fantastic having you on. This is really an inspiring conversation, and I think it's, you know, it's going to sit with me for a while, and I'm going to play more of those games, extend that feeling a bit.
Yeah.
Learn the truth about those birds.
I'm not sure if I'm ready. That's our show. For show notes and links from today's conversation, including links to all of the places you can find Quinn K online, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on Twitter and Mastodon at Nice Games Club, where Dale tweets and toots about game dev resources and Super Mario Odyssey themes. We like hearing from you, so tweet and toot back. Or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is also on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be looking at player motivations and copying others. But that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.